The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, Twisters has taken Hollywood by storm. Tell me, let's dive into some news. Let's kick things off with some box office discussion here. Tell me what I need to know about how Twisters performed during its opening frame here.
So I'll go over the top 10 here real quick, and then we'll circle back to discussing Twisters, because some stuff happened that if we talked about it yesterday, the narrative is now just ever so slightly different. But so Twisters topped the North American box office with $81.2 million domestically in its opening weekend. Coming in at number two is Despicable Me 4 with $24.4 million, dropping just 44% in its third weekend. Inside Out 2 holding unbelievably strong with $12.8 million in its sixth weekend, dropping just under 36%. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Perhaps the biggest surprise of the entire weekend, even more than Twisters, was Long Legs coming in at number four with $11.9 million, dropping just under 47% in its second weekend. We will talk about why that's very impressive. Number five is A Quiet Place Day One, still holding strong, $6.3 million in its fourth weekend. Number six, Fly Me to the Moon, not holding strong, dropping almost 65% in its second weekend for just a $3.3 million take. Number seven is Bad Boys Ride or Die, coming in with $2.6 million, dropping about 37% in its seventh weekend. That one's fading out fast. Number eight is something called Bad News, news spelt with a Z, which I have not really heard of this movie, but it made about $1 million on 477 screens for a respectable $2,200 average, give or take. Number nine is Maxine, again with a severe drop, with just $819,000 and a 60% drop. And at number 10 was The Bike Riders, somehow jumping back into the top 10. It increased its take 81% on just 300 screens for $722,000, jumping over Horizon and American Saga, which is now out of the top 10 in just its fourth weekend.
Man, that's pretty cool for The Bike Riders. Good to hear.
Yeah, just seem people are still seeking that one out. I don't, you know, and, you know, it did a respectable 21.2 domestic, 35 worldwide, and Focus only paid about half price for it just because Disney wanted it off its books. So Focus will do okay with that. And I like that movie quite a bit, so I'm happy it at least did something there.
Excellent. Okay, so tell me about Twisters. Number one at the box office. This seems to have wildly overperformed in terms of expectations, which seems to be a pattern that we've experienced a lot of over the past, I don't know, few months or so, which is kind of a good problem for us to have, right?
It is a very good problem for us to have, given how bad the first half of the year was. So the reason I say things changed is that yesterday, all my write-ups were based on the estimates, which suggested Twisters had made $80.5 million over the weekend, but it made $81.2. So it actually made even more than the estimate suggested, which is just super impressive. The official tracking had it at about, 50-ish million dollars. But the folks at Box Office Theory and some of the other prognosticators tracking websites out there had it in the 70-ish million dollar range. Like, so there were some people that believed this was possible. But it was at the very top end of the most optimistic projections that I had seen. So it's great. It's great. It now holds the record for a disaster movie on opening weekend, toppling The Day After Tomorrow, which came out 20 years ago. So that record held for 20 years, which to me was very surprising. when I was sort of looking over that. So that's the picture in North America. Very good. The movie has a net $155 million budget. My understanding is that the spend was around $200 million, but tax credits and everything else got it to $155. And for this kind of movie, that's good. You know, I finally got to see it last night. I thought it looked great. I had a really good time with it. I don't have anything more profound to say than anyone else does. But yeah, so that's the good. There is a bit of not so good here that hasn't been talked about as much, which, you know, we can get into. But
yeah, what's that?
So look, a movie, $155 million movie. Yes, the domestic box office is an enormous part of that. But part of the reason I tend to focus on global box office is because it paints a more complete picture, particularly for a bigger movie. And this movie's struggling overseas. So internationally thus far, Twisters has only made $43.5 million. Now, Universal's handling distribution domestically and Warner Brothers is handling internationally. So this is not great for Warner Brothers. It only has South Korea and Japan to open in, I believe, still. And those can be robust markets, but not enough to completely change that narrative. So the original Twister made something like 52% of its money overseas, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Whereas this one is making 65% of its money domestically as it stands. So the international numbers are lagging very far behind. And at the current rate, it's probably going to do like, you know, 200 on the low end domestically, maybe 250 on the high end. So it would need to do like 150 internationally to kind of justify the expense purely from a theatrical standpoint, which it might not do. So you know, we'll have to see how it unfolds. But as of right now, those overseas numbers are lagging.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe word of mouth will result in this movie suffering a pretty small or a comparatively small drop in its second weekend, because a lot of people seem to really like the movie. So maybe that'll help. I don't know.
Yeah, I think word of mouth is going to be strong. I think what's probably going to happen, because we have Deadpool and Wolverine coming out and the projections just keep going up and up and up for that one. So I think what's probably going to happen is Twisters is going to drop pretty hard this upcoming weekend, but then I think it will lag out after that. Like, its holds will be really strong after Deadpool's opening weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so like, I think like, you know, even stuff like Long Legs or some of this other stuff that's held well, like a lot's going to drop next weekend, I think. I'm trying to figure out what's going to benefit the most from a counter-programming standpoint, and that might actually be Twisters, because, you know, some of the other stuff is R-rated, like, we'll see. I'm not super sure, but yeah, it's at least in North America and for theaters in North America, Twisters was like another really strong, like, okay, good, we're recovering from the first half of the year, which sucked really badly. Yeah. So it's another positive in that way, for sure.
Do you have a theory about why the tracking numbers have been so wrong so far this summer?
Me? This hasn't just been this summer. This has been a thing that people in my circles have been talking about for a handful of years, and it got worse post-pandemic. There's been plenty of examples of this happening. Me and several other people have tried to figure out why, with no real clear answers. I think it's just that, like, whatever these tracking services are, it's sort of like how Nielsen ratings for a long time still only took live TV into account. And they weren't accounting for, like, you know, streaming viewership and some of these other things. And it really made those Nielsen ratings very outdated. I have to assume that however these tracking services run, it's just maybe that their model's outdated and they have to figure out a better way to, you know, kind of truly gauge interest and gauge where I'm not super sure, but I just have to assume that the model was a little outdated is my guess. Because some of these people, like, credit to, like, Sean Robbins at Box Office Theory, they put a wider range on these things, but they tend to be I think sometimes even when these other movies have overperformed, they've been a little closer to the ballpark. So, you know, there's some people that seem to have a bit of a model for it, but we'll see, I don't really have a great answer for that, but it is happening a lot.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about Long Legs. You mentioned that, and you wrote an article saying that Long Legs is horror's biggest box office surprise of the year. We knew that it opened strong, but tell me about its second weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more surprised about this. We talked a lot, you know, last weekend that Long Legs was, you know, by far Neon's biggest opener, one of the biggest horror openings of the year, shy of A Quiet Place Day One. One of the bigger movie openings for an indie movie, like in the last like 20 years. I mean, it truly was impressive. But the thing is, when a movie outperforms on its opening weekend so much, it's never shocking if it drops a lot in its second weekend, particularly as bigger competition comes about. So I sort of thought Long Legs was going to drop close to like 70%. And to be clear, that wouldn't have necessarily been a bad thing because the movie overperformed so much in its opening weekend. But word of mouth has been strong for this one, and it dropped just 46.6%, and it made almost $12 million on its second weekend, and it added 340 theaters, but it was still only playing in 2,850 screens, so its per screen average was still $4,200, which was amazing. You know, so like, I mean, it had a better per screen average than Inside Out 2 this weekend. You know, like that it's that incredible. Like, it's so amazing that that this movie is holding this well. Have you seen Long Legs yet, Ben?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I really liked it.
I did too, but it's a bleak movie. Like, yeah. And I don't think the marketing has hidden that, right? Like, you're not in for a traditionally fun ride. So I don't know. I mean, I think what's crazy is like that C+ cinema score. I thought like word of mouth was going to be mixed, but clearly like, I think what's going on is there's the people that love it are like, oh yeah, you need to see it. And then the people that hate it are probably almost generating interest to other people by being like, well, I might need to see this for myself. And yeah, I mean, so just to give you some idea, Long Legs is now at basically 45 million domestic, and Neon's biggest domestic grosser ever was Parasite, which made, I believe, just shy of $54 million. So Long Legs is going to become Neon's biggest movie ever here within a week. Mm-hmm. And then this has a real shot at making like 70 to 75 million domestic by the end of its run. And depending on what it does overseas, those numbers are slowly trickling in because like other distributors are handling it overseas. So this could be $100 million movie by the time it's over.
Wow.
Which is just like, for a sub $10 million movie with like a modest but very clever marketing campaign, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's a huge win.
And like, you would call this, I think one of the points that, shout out to Lisa Lehman, who, another box office analyst that I want to give credit to for this, but like, it's an uncompromised movie. Like, it really feels like Oz Perkins made a movie that wasn't like, it doesn't feel like there's a studio note on that thing.
Right.
Like, it really just feels like this is the movie and it's working. And, you know, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, it's like nice when a franchise film does well in horror or whatever. But I mean, this is really good for horror fans, that because horror continues to be one of the only genres where like a truly original hit can emerge. And so it's nice when that happens. And so I don't know. I feel very good about Long Legs in particular. Maybe my bias is showing, but like that just is like very encouraging to me, and I'm very happy about it.
Yeah. So if you're just listening to this podcast for the first time, Ryan and I talked a little bit about this movie and its opening weekend last week. But Chris Evangelista and I also did like a big spoiler discussion of the ending that I really enjoyed our conversation about that. So I encourage people to check that out if you have watched this movie and maybe have some questions about the ending of the movie and stuff like that. We talked about all of that in great detail. Okay, let's see. What else do we have to talk about here, Ryan? Inside Out 2, you mentioned that crossed another box office milestone.
Yeah, so Inside Out 2 officially now in the top 15 all time. You know, it is somewhat quietly just continued. And I'm talking worldwide grosses, not to miss. So worldwide, it is now at number 14 on the charts. Actually, as of today, it passed Barbie. When I wrote that article, it was at 15. But as of today, it passed Barbie with a few thousand dollars. So it is now 14 all time with $1.445 billion. It will next pass Frozen 2, which sits at $1.453 billion. So any day now it will pass Frozen 2. And at that point, Inside Out 2 will arguably be the highest grossing animated movie of all time. I say arguably because 2019's The Lion King, there is some debate as to whether or not that's an animated movie, even though it is technically CGI, but it's meant to be photorealistic. I don't need to get into that debate, and I'm not here to settle that debate, but it's certainly going to pass Frozen 2 to become the unquestioned, like, pure animation, let's call it, I guess, like number one pure animated movie. And then the big question now is when it gets to the top 10. It will almost certainly at this point pass the Avengers, which made $1.52 billion back in 2012. Then that's probably as far as it'll go. The Lion King would be next, and that movie made $1.66 billion. Inside Out is starting to slow a little bit, so I think that's less likely, but certainly possible. So it wouldn't go any higher than that, I don't think. But that is just truly, truly remarkable stuff. For, you know, again, we've talked a lot about Pixar and what, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, what this movie continues to do, you know, I mean, it's great. It has made more than double the second biggest movie of the year, which was Dune Part 2. So, I mean, that's, you know, just to illustrate how big of a hit it is. Yeah. That's impressive. Yeah.
Okay, last question I have for you on this topic is, after the success of Twister's opening weekend, do you happen to know off the top of your head what the percentage comparison numbers are right now between 2024, like whatever it is, year to date versus 2023? Because I think, you know, at the beginning of the summer, you and I were talking about like, it, you know, it's basically not going to happen that the 2024 box office total is going to be able to surpass 2023. And I think you threw out some stat to me. I don't remember whether it was like 20% behind or like even more than that. And it was like, oh, wow, that really illustrates, you know, how far behind this year was lagging compared to last year. But because of the really impressive successes that we've experienced over the past few weeks, like since we had that conversation, whatever it was, a month or two ago, I was wondering if you have an update on how far behind 2024 is to 2023.
Yeah, so I don't have the most updated numbers, but before Twisters came out, the last number that I had seen is that ticket sales were lagging around 17% behind. And at one point it was like 22%.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it, you know, so as of July 7th, so I'm looking back, it was 17% down. So we've since had a couple of very good weekends. So The only thing I'd say is that we're probably still hovering around there, because this same weekend last year was when Barbenheimer happened. Mm-hmm. So you know, last year you would have had the not only Oppenheimer but Barbie as well. So right now you don't have a Barbie, right? Like, So I think it's hovering around 17%. So okay, we've made up some ground for sure, and we have. I think obviously the end of July and the early part of August are probably not going to be quite as robust as the end of July and the early part of August were last year because of Barbenheimer, but I think we have some really like promising stuff on the calendar. I think Alien Romulus is, I think that movie stock continues to go up. And again, I think Deadpool and Wolverine is probably going to, I think we're probably going to be closer to a $200 million opening there. So, you know, that could more than make up for Barbie, right? Like, so I think we could, by the end of the summer, maybe close that gap to 15% or less.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's impressive that we're gaining on it, considering how sort of a bleak of an outlook we had, you know, a few months
ago. For sure. So and then,
the stuff can change.
Yeah. The fall has like, you know, Joker, Folie à Deux, and some of these things we'll talk about in a second. But can I take 1 second to highlight one thing real quick and then we can move on?
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
There is a small horror movie called Oddity that hit theaters this weekend. It was only in 790 theaters. It didn't make a ton of money, but Oddity is, I got to see it at South by Southwest. It is one of the best horror movies I've seen this year for sure. And it is for sure the scariest horror movie I've seen this year. There is something in it that is just pure nightmare fuel that will live on in horror infamy forever, I believe. I encourage horror fans to seek out Oddity, please. If you can see it in a theater, it'll be streaming eventually, whatever, but, Oddity is out there. Do not let this one slip under the radar. Seek it out.
Yeah, that was what yesterday's podcast episode was all about. So definitely, I back Ryan's recommendation 100% right there.
Yeah, I just wanted to voice my chorus there too, that like, please don't let this one slip. It's really, really good.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about a bunch more news.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
All right, Ryan, we have to talk about the Russo brothers returning to Marvel Studios for two new Avengers movies. This kind of seemed inevitable, or at least like the safest possible choice, but it certainly seems like the Anthony and Joe Russo, who directed a bunch of Marvel films over the years, including Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame, are, I mean, as close to official as it can be to returning to.
Yeah, let's not forget that San Diego Comic-Con is this weekend, and almost certainly that's when the announcement's going to be made.
Yes. So do you have any sort of hot take on them coming back, or does this just like make so much sense that it's almost not even worth talking about?
I think it makes a lot of sense for both sides. But it does feel like a little safe for both sides. But at the same time, like, there's been a lot of, like, it's amazing how Marvel has fallen, because, like, it felt like at one point everyone would have been like, hell yeah, the guys that made Avengers Endgame are making another Avengers movie, let's go. And it just feels like there's a lot of people that are like, boo, boring. And I'm like, meh. Here's the thing. These guys made Captain America the Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War, Avengers Infinity War, and Avengers Endgame. They have taken a few years to do some other stuff. None of that has panned out quite as well. I am willing to give this the benefit of the doubt, because those dudes have thrived in the Marvel environment. Like, I mean, I know it's easy to take for granted now. Avengers Endgame could have been a disaster, and those guys made that movie sing. Like, I mean, I know, like, Marvel has tested some of us these past few years. That movie is still a miracle to me. In the same way that I think like Avengers Civil or Captain America Civil War is in a lot of ways like a miracle. So I don't know. I think that for me, I choose optimism until there's reason not to, right?
I mean, I just kind of think this is a best case scenario, because it means that we're not going to be getting like the Gray Man 2 and some of this other stuff that they had, you know, been wanting to work on. Like,
right.
they fit well in the Marvel mold. They clearly have a good relationship with Kevin Feige. They understand how to make those movies and, you know, how to sort of handle the gigantic pressures of a production with a billion, you know, A-list movie stars and all that kind of stuff. There are not that many people in Hollywood who have that particular skill set. We can talk about, you know, where they rank in the great pantheon of artists and all of that kind of stuff. And you know, maybe we can have that conversation on another podcast or something. But just in terms of like the nuts and bolts of being able to get a movie like this across the finish line and have it turn out to be either pretty good to great, you know, okay, cool. Like, maybe our collective interest in Marvel Studios movies is not at the high that it once was, which is fine. But I kind of look at this as like a net good, because, yeah, like I said, at least we're not going to have to be asked to pay attention to other projects that they work on that have, as you mentioned, have not panned out in the way that they wanted. So I would much rather have them combine what they do well with whatever Marvel needs from them, and like think about that as a pillar off to one side, and like only engage with that thing, that nebulous thing, the one time that movie comes out, whenever it is, or I guess two times in this case for Avengers 5 and 6, instead of like spreading this stuff across, you know, multiple movies and multiple genres and all that.
But I think the other thing that, well before there was any real negativity about the MCU or the Russo brothers in general, they said Secret Wars was the thing that could bring them back. Like, they are very, like, vocal fans, and for years have been saying that that's the thing that they would like to do. So there's also, like, a clear passion for that source material. So, like, I think that's, you can't sort of ignore that, right? Like, that when you have passion for the material, that's helpful. Do we want to go over my harebrained theory for the long haul, or should we just leave that alone?
Let's save that for another day because we're running a little bit long.
Okay, we're running a little long. All right.
Put a pin in that because I am interested and maybe we can talk about it in another news episode.
Sounds good.
I did want to mention real quick that there's this rumor out there that Robert Downey Jr. could return to Marvel, but not as Iron Man. There's some discussion that is floating around the internet that like perhaps he might be interested in returning to Marvel Studios to play a version of Tony Stark in a different, you know, from a different universe, who becomes Dr. Doom, who is the villain in the Fantastic Four franchise. This has not been confirmed. Even the source for this rumor has said that his own sources have sort of denied the questions about whether or not Downey has been actually cast in the Fantastic Four. I will say the only reason I'm talking about this is because Slashfilm has heard some very, very similar stuff. So we know that there's something to this. We couldn't like get it double confirmed enough to publish it ourselves. But the fact that somebody else published this and it aligns very much with what we've been hearing behind the scenes, it was enough for me to even to just bring it up on this episode of a podcast. So whereas I was very much down with, or am very much down with, the Russos returning to Marvel, I'm totally against this idea, Brian. But what do you think about the idea of Downey coming back potentially as Dr. Doom?
I think it's better than just bringing him back as Iron Man again somehow, right? Like, because I think that is truly sacrilegious. Like, do not just bring him back as Iron Man, but we are clearly establishing this multiverse thing to feed on nostalgia as best as we can. This is more interesting to me, but I agree with you. I still don't want it to happen. My only thing is I have to imagine RDJ doesn't want to be in the MCU again for another 10 years. So I think this would probably be a one and done thing. I don't know. I'm kind of with you, but I think it's better than just getting him back as Iron Man. Like, but that would be like truly terrible. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So next up, I wanted to mention this Joker 2, Joker Folie à Deux trailer that debuted this morning. I don't really have a super strong opinion about this. I think the first movie was like, okay, I guess. It was just kind of like, it went in one ear and out the other to me. It just kind of felt like empty style for style's sake. I don't know, maybe you can go back and listen to my actual reaction to seeing the movie on the podcast, like whatever, from 2019, whenever that came out. But I have not thought really much about the first Joker movie. It's not something that I really think about or care very much about. So this sequel, I'm kind of like, I feel similarly. I'm just kind of like, okay, I guess this is happening. But it seems like you have a much more, I don't know, a stronger reaction to this trailer. So tell me about that, Ryan.
Yeah. Look, everyone knows I don't like to be negative around these parts, but I detest that first Joker movie. I hate it. I hated how everyone, like all my normie friends, made me seem like I was stupid for not quote unquote getting it. Oh boy, do I hate that movie. And, I also really don't like musicals. And oh my God, just like all of that thrown in a blender for the, it's just like this new trailer. There was a part of morbid curiosity that existed before this trailer, after this trailer. I'm like, the reactions and the reviews make it where I must do a 180. I will not see this movie. You will not hear me talk informed about it because I won't watch it. Like, I'm not going to spend any amount of my life watching something I am this ready to not like. I apologize to people that don't like the negativity, but boy, does this just rub me like in every wrong way. Like, I just want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I understand that feeling. Like, it's rare, but when that hits, there's not really anything you can do about it. You know, when you just have such a visceral reaction to something, and like, you know, we talk all the time about wanting every movie to be good and like being excited to sit down in the theater to every single movie, regardless of like what the response has been. And like, maybe anything's possible before the lights go down in the theater, right? But when you have such a strong reaction to a trailer like that, and it just seems like there's no way that you're going to be able to overcome that hump and get over into the realm of actually liking this movie. So
no,
I respect
again,
it.
Yeah. Like, and again, it's like, it's, I just like when I remember when I was watching the trailer, I had that, I don't know if you've watched The Office, but there's that, you know, phone call Michael's making to Ryan at one point. He's like, I'm going to throw up. You're making me throw up. Like, that's how I felt watching this. It's like, nope, I don't know. It seems like an art movie for people who have a very minimal understanding of cinema to me. Like, and I say this as someone who generally just likes popcorn movies and kind of doesn't have a great understanding of these things, but yeah, I don't know. But I mean, we could talk about the interesting thing that's revealed in this trailer if you want.
Yeah, go ahead. We'll make it quick, but go ahead and mention that.
Yeah, so I won't say much. And look, this is not a spoiler because it's revealed in the trailer. If you had the captions on, one of the people speaking is Harvey Dent. We don't know who that person is yet because the person was talking off screen, but Harvey Dent is going to be in this movie, which comes with a dizzying array of implications, depending on how you want to think about how a guy like Harvey Dent could factor into a movie where there is a trial of Arthur Fleck. So, you know, it actually makes a lot of sense. When you think about it, it's like, oh yeah, if you're going to take a Batman character and put him in there, context of this movie, it makes sense.
Yeah, and you wrote a whole article about this, so I encourage people to go read that. But I think the thing that jumped out to me was your framing of the first Joker movie and this movie essentially being Todd Phillips' version of like the Elseworlds type of comics story, where it like doesn't fit into the typical continuity or anything like that. Like, we saw in the first Joker movie that Batman, or Bruce Wayne, is a very young boy, so it doesn't really make sense for that young person to grow up to be Batman and to fight the Joker as played by Joaquin Phoenix. So then the same thing kind of applies to Harvey Dent here, probably. I mean, unless
it's Elseworlds logic.
Which is fine. Number of years pass between the first Joker and this in universe or something, but even still. I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to point that out, but yeah. Go check out those articles, and I've linked to our write-up of the trailer there in case you haven't seen that yet. All right. I wanted to mention also there's a report published in Bloomberg recently that essentially confirms what everybody has known for some time now, which is the fact that Netflix has won the streaming wars. And this report provides some pretty interesting data to back that up. And specifically, they say that Apple TV Plus is currently attracting 0.2% of TV viewing in the United States, and that Apple TV Plus generates less viewing in 1 month than Netflix does in 1 day, which is like really brutal. Like, I knew that Apple TV Plus didn't have a ton of subscribers and didn't necessarily have a major cultural footprint, whereas like obviously seemingly everything that gets dropped onto Netflix becomes like a massive overnight hit or whatever. But man, those numbers, like the disparity there is pretty stark.
It's brutal.
Partially because of that disparity, and partially because Apple has spent like $20 billion making shows and movies over the past few years, the bosses at Apple are now pushing the executives in charge of that streaming service to tamp down spending on their project, which is exactly what I was worried about when we talked about this last week. So this is all still pretty nebulous, and we don't know to what degree they're going to be scaling things back, but I would just say it's something to keep an eye on.
Well, they're scaling back. This is specifically about TV viewership. And so I think that a lot of this was focused on the TV shows. You gotta keep in mind, the TV shows only generate revenue on Apple TV Plus. The movies have the potential to at least offset the costs a little more. So I think that this is going to the movies are going to be a slightly different calculus. I would just caution that I think the big thing here is that the TV shows have not broken through in a majorly culturally significant way, except for Ted Lasso, which is also one of the cheaper shows they made. And so I think that that's my read on that. But I agree with you that, yeah, like they are going to keep an eye on it. But, you know, the movies at least have the chance to offset the costs of it.
Yeah. Okay, so the last story that I wanted to mention is something that you wrote up, an article called Movie Tickets Might Get More Expensive Very Soon. Here is why. And I was just wondering if you could give the quick pitch for what that is and why that might happen, and then we can drive people to the article to find out more details. But what's the gist of this one, Ryan?
Yeah, so very quickly, there's this consulting and accounting firm called PwC, and they put out this Global Entertainment and Media Outlook report annually, and it sort of looks over the next handful of years and what they believe is coming. And, you know, look, predictions are never totally accurate, but it does give a shape of things to come. And one of the things is the good is that they believe that by 2026, we will reach pre-pandemic levels of box office again globally, which is great. The bad news is ticket sales will still be lagging behind. So, how is it that you're making the same amount of revenue with less tickets sold? Because those tickets are going to get more expensive, ladies and gentlemen. We've talked a lot about this recently and reasons why that should or shouldn't happen. And I go over a lot of that in the article. But the short of it is the industry, it seems, is probably going to double down on let's try to make the most of the people that are still coming to the movies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
that's kind of it. I think that's a good tease. I feel like we could do probably an entire podcast episode just about this story, but we're just kind of running out of time today. But I do want to encourage people to go read that story because it has some good stuff in there. And I think it'll provide a much more well-rounded framework of that conversation and sort of link in your mind back to some of the things we've talked about in this podcast about this very topic. So yeah, I think that should do it for today's episode. But once again, you can find more about all the things that we talked about on the show at slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.